This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:14 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're moving on to a story about academic publishing and a practice that has come to light recently of what is called predatory journals and how many Malaysian academicians have been publishing their research on these journals, which are in effect fraudulent.
Yeah, so I think this highlights a few different things, right? The pressures particularly that people are under to publish and what that does for your career, because of course that's what drives people to the arms of these journals in the first place. So if we look at how these journals practice, right, some of them offer pay-to-publish schemes, for example, some up to a cost of $1,000 per article. And a recent study by Scopus, which is a Netherlands-based global citation database, found that Malaysia was the fifth highest contributor to predatory scholarly journals. And this is fifth highest out of 20 countries studied.
Yeah, and you mentioned pressures earlier, right, Lynn? And so it's worth, I think, talking about why professors would do this in the first place. I think a lot of this has to do with this push to want to gain recognition or to attain promotions in a shorter amount of time. And universities have also become, or have, I think, started cultivating a publish or perish ecosystem. And this leads to academicians being sort of fairly desperate to get their work published so as to meet these KPIs, because the more papers you publish, the higher rankings the university gets, which translates to more prestige, which translates to higher income.
Now, if you look at what reputable journals do, right, generally they can take up to 10 months to review a scholarly article and they require a standard to be met before publishing. And in contrast with that, publishing in some predatory journals can take just a week, which I think, going back to exactly what you were just saying, right, about the pressures of this, about the need to publish more and more often, I think that's where this time frame really comes into play. It is also, however, not the first time that Malaysian academia has come under a similar sort of microscope. Mm. So in this case, journals. In the past, we've also talked about degree farms and how it is that some prominent Malaysians who talk about their academic qualifications may not necessarily have obtained those qualifications from the university that you think they got them from.
Yes, and I think in a larger sense, this speaks to a loss of faith or a drop in the esteem that our larger academic field eventually has, because it's very difficult to ascertain for a general layperson what is fraudulent, what is something that we can rely on, and then overall I think there is a definite sense of not knowing who to look to when you want, even in our case, for instance, right? Are the people with the most publishing credits the ones that we can rely on to give us the right opinions? So we will be speaking to someone who will clarify this and sort of break apart how this system works. But let us know, are you in academics yourself? Are you someone who relies on these journals? Share your thoughts with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now on the line with us is Prof. Zahram Nain, who is the chair of GURA, or the Malaysian Academic Movement. Thanks for joining us, Prof.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
So tell us about, tell us about the importance of publishing when it comes to being an academic.
Well, I guess almost everyone who's familiar with academia will have heard the refrain, publish or perish, as you said just now. And cliché though it may sound, it reflects the importance placed in academia in publishing and publications. I guess there are four key areas that many academics around the world are supposed to focus on. Not necessarily in order. These are to research, to conduct research, to teach, to give public service, to provide public service, and of course administrative duties. With research, it is assumed, comes the publication of that research. Hence, looking at this list of academic duties, you can see how important publication is as part of an academic's career.
Maybe you could highlight a little bit more about the pressure to publish. So like you rightly point out, it's an important aspect of that. But in real time, right, as a actual academic sitting in the position that you sit in, what is the pressure like?
Well, this pressure these days is mainly external, as you alluded to earlier. The pressure to publish, and I would suggest it is a relatively recent phenomenon in Malaysia. This has come about, I believe, with the emergence of World University Rankings, these organizations and their yearly charts of who's at the top and who's not in the university ranking tables. So where previously academics published to share and spread knowledge and maybe have bragging rights, these days, while those motivations are still there, many universities have set KPIs for their faculty. Stuff like promotion, increments are invariably tied to these KPIs, including but not exclusively research published as journal articles, book chapters, books, and so on and so forth. So you add to this, of course, are the so-called value put on certain publications and publishers and not on others. It's a kind of snob appeal, I guess, of publishing in certain publications and not others. In this kind of situation, not surprisingly, some journals or publications are much sought after, while others are found lower down the ladder or pecking order. And not surprisingly, there's pressure put on academics to publish in what are called top-tier journals, to enable them to be evaluated higher and in the university rankings game, to help these universities push themselves higher up the tables. Malaysia is relatively new to the game, as I said. But we must remember that many of our 20 public universities are less than 30 years old, and being relatively new and not having the resources and expertise of, say, Yale, Harvard, Oxford, or Cambridge, or even Singapore's NUS. These universities find themselves at a disadvantage, hence under some pressure.
So these recent reports, you know, they talk about what they call predatory scholarly journals, talking about paying for publishing and so on. What exactly are these? How do they operate?
Well, I think the term predatory scholarly is a bit of an oxymoron. Predatory journals would be a better term. First, imagine the above scenario that I have outlined, where there is a limited number of journals, often published twice yearly, or at most quarterly. These journals would in turn accept a limited number of articles that have been peer-reviewed. So second, where are the rest going to publish their stuff? In the good old days, they would wait for their turn, preferring quality rather than expediency. But now, with KPIs being set and the need to attract students and scholars from beyond our shores to fill up our coffers, especially for the many private universities that have mushroomed over a short space of time, research and publication output matter. Third, they matter sometimes, and increasingly many times, not for reasons of knowledge generation and knowledge diffusion and exchange, but for quantitatively enhancing the reputation of faculty members and, of course, the universities. So fourth, there must be an outlet, a market for this research. And there are institutions and businesses aware of this market. Hence the emergence and spread of predatory journals. There are also predatory conferences, a close cousin of these journals. The aim is to capitalize on a demand, a need, brought about by universities setting KPIs to enable them to join the rankings and play the ratings game, the ratings and rankings game.
So for the average person then, or as somebody who from time to time may find themselves looking up these sorts of articles, these sorts of, hopefully peer-reviewed articles and papers, how can you tell which journals are reputable? How can you tell when you're reading one that is, in fact, properly vetted through?
Well, for me, there are no hard and fast rules, I feel. More often than not, however, one needs to check out who the publisher is, who make up the editorial board, are articles peer-reviewed, and also how long the journal has been in existence. And in this kind of sense, giveaways are grammatical errors that are not edited. These days with the internet, there are easy ways to check out the type of journal we're dealing with. But of course, with the latest revelation that even some scopus journals have been found to be predatory and of questionable quality, we have to be more careful and discerning, I guess.
Now, if a published paper is found to be questionable or factually incorrect, what are the consequences to the academic who authored that work, but also to the university that they belong to?
to the academic, well, it would really depend on the severity of the problem and whether the authorities want to penalize or cover up. Many a time, the latter has been the option, unfortunately, in the context of Malaysia. There was this case of an associate professor at the Klang Valley University who was exposed as having plagiarized his whole PhD from, I think, a German book. He then went on to become a professor in an East Coast university. Cases like that are there, and unfortunately, they're let off rather lightly. So for the university, when you have this kind of things happening, too many cases of this nature, which are not addressed in a proper manner, would lead to the university gaining a dubious reputation and invariably not being the university of choice for students and academics.
So with that then, let's talk about what it would take to tackle a problem like this. You know, what would work? And on a university level, what solutions have we seen?
Okay, at one level, for the long run, we need to instill among our young over time the importance of integrity and honesty. Yeah, but really, there needs to be reform in society. If our politicians, for example, are let off scot-free for having fake degrees, what message does that send to all individuals, groups and institutions in our society? You see, I think we have to face it. Ours is really a terribly dishonest society. Yeah? At another level, predator publishing is invariably related to the motivations and objectives of universities. As long as the primary or main aim is to go up the rankings, to enhance reputations and increase intake and revenue, this will continue. There is really a need to reassess what essentially are neoliberal priorities. Yeah.
And what about the Ministry of Higher Education? Where do they come into this? Are they aware this is happening? Have they introduced measures?
I think that's a question best posed to the minister and the ministry concerned. Right now, I believe they're busy chasing sugar daddies and sugar babies.
Fair enough. Okay, so you talked earlier about how we could see a loss of credibility and the like if we don't address this. Overall, what are the other long-term impacts we might see of this on Malaysian research and academia and academic institutions if we don't arrest this now?
Okay, I think we have to provide some context here. Good research and good researchers will still prevail. And Malaysia has many of good research and good researchers, definitely, yeah. While these allegations are there, we must also scrutinize these allegations to determine whether they are true or just attempts to belittle, to undermine and rubbish certain journals, possibly those not published in the West, yeah. If they are indeed true, these allegations are true, we need to look at ways to come up with and develop local journals of quality, not necessarily in the colonial English language, of course. If language proficiency is a problem, let us publish in BM, but make sure that the standards are as high, if not higher, than what's on offer in English. Now, we just can't think about stopping things. We must also think about producing. I mean producing new knowledge, new research, and of course, new publications.
Prof? Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
That was Prof. Zahrom Nain, who is the chair of GERA, or the Malaysian Academic Movement. You can continue to share your thoughts with us. But coming up after the news and some music, we have Popcorn Culture. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.